Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome back to the Shed End 868 show with me, Jesus. This is a very special episode. We have a very special guest on with us today. Also, the usual news, reviews, previews, stats, and facts. So without much further ado, let's get straight into today's episode. Chilwell must go. Yeah, he must go. I don't, whatever you're thinking in your mind is exactly that. But madness, Chilwell must go. There's no if, no buts, no maybe. He must go on doing what he's doing. I mean, let's get real. What he's doing here, if he ceases that, well, then makes no sense. Because the man, in his last four games for country and club, he scored. The last four EPL starts he's had, he scored. He's found back his rhythm. He's found back his form. He's impressive again once more on the left. And competition for that position, even competition for any position in our team, I mean, the team benefits. Tuchel benefits. The fans benefit. The club benefits. Because everybody want to play their best on any given day. Because they don't want to get dropped. So Ben Chilwell must go on doing what he's doing. Yeah? So don't try to bite my head off. Alright? So we have a long episode today. We have a very nice, wonderful interview with Feroz. And so let's get straight into the under 16s, under 18s, under 23s, the youth, the women. Touch on the men's Champions League game and dive straight into the interview after. So the under-16s, you had to say congrats to them. They won, they were winners of the Premier League National Under-16 tournament this past weekend, beating Everton 2-1 in the final. So you have to give them massive, massive respect. They are under-16. They already know what it is to win. To play for Chelsea means to win, to push for every single thing. And they started it from the bottom, come all the way up. So I hope to see some of them in the under-18s, 23s, and hopefully in the senior men team in years to come. So as we go up the age bracket, the under-18s, my boy, they were involved in goals galore. It was a goal fest. It was almost like the goal rush, but it took place in England. As the Blues, the junior Blues I should say, they started the scoring in the 6th minute through Anderson. And they ended the scoring in the 85th minute through Son Sopbel. Hope I didn't mess up your name, sir. And it was a thrilling 4-4 draw with both players scoring braces at Motspur Park. So it was just bang on from get-go. It was just bang on. And the results leaves the boys 5th on 13 points. Now, they'll be looking to build on this. It's just 1 point, we'll be looking to build on it after they came from 2 back-to-back defeats. I mean, 1 point is not ideal, but it's better than none. And we have Reading on the 30th of October. So while going forward, offensively, we look wonderful. Defensively, it'll tighten up and we're back in the mix for things. Move up to the 23s. The drawing didn't stop there as we drew as well with Leicester. With 2 goals within 5 minutes of each other. 1-1. They share the points. Fai Bema. I don't know why I was mispronouncing his name almost every week. I have to talk about him scoring. Because this boy is just on fire. Fiamba scored in the 63rd minute. But it was cancelled out in the 68th minute. By the home team's very own goal. Now, this name, I know I butchered, yeah, but I just want to, you know. And the scorer's name, his name is Madi Vadua. I hope I pronounced that as perfect as I can. So that result leaves the boys on 9 points. Not the perfect position, but it's a point, nonetheless, in the right direction. As we face Everton next on the 30th of October. So, Andy Myers will do his very best to ensure full points next game against Everton there. But he did very, very good with the youth team and the Champions League against Malmo. So they now have a slight cushion in Group H as they rallied from 2-0 down, scoring 4 second half goals, courtesy of Ranky Simons, Fayamba, that boy is just on fire, I tell you, and Silk Thomas. They bounce back. Bounce back ability. Yeah. They have that in them. And they definitely show that resilience. They never give up. Not dropping heads. Not slouching shoulders. And I hope this continues as we have Malmo again on the 2nd of November. And we look to capitalize on this form. Fayamba, that boy is just red hot right now. I feel he's going to fire us to some trophies in the youth division. Hope to see him in a few years in the senior men's team. Yeah, let's look for that. The women, they had no football this week. They had there were some internationals, so they had a little break. They are currently second in the league on 15 points. Their next game is on the 6th of November versus Aston Villa, which will be an interesting game. They are second also in their UCL group, but that's just on goal difference, as Wolfsburg put a good looking on Servette FCCF last time also. Yeah, little bump up there, goal difference. The women's next game, however, is this weekend, the 31st, last day of October, against Man City. Fifth meeting in this stage in 7 years with these teams. So both opponents know each other's good. Emma Hayes ladies, they're going to do good. We know that. We're going to reach the finals and hopefully raise the FA Cup trophy for the first time since 2016. So, yeah, we look forward to that very jam-packed weekend. Chelsea all over, all around. The men wrapped up a very impressive, or should I say bittersweet day against Malmo in Champions League. By the 48th minute, was wrapped up thanks to Kai. Jorginho scored 2 penalties against 2 different goalkeepers, something that's only happened once before in Champions League. And it happened literally 20 years ago to the day of this game. So, I mean, that's just universe, yes? And Andreas Christensen scored his first Chelsea goal. 8 years with the club, 9 years, 8 years, 9 years with the club. Scored his first goal. I'm very proud for him, very happy for him. And as I said, it was a bittersweet game, as before the first half, we lost both Lukaku, ankle, and Werner, hamstring. So they will be out for a few weeks. And we started off the game so brilliant, you know, the pace, the energy, the directness of the whole of the first, 15, 20, 25, for 30 minutes, you know, the energy was there. And it was evident that in this game and the subsequent game, Norwich game, which we'll get to in a bit, that we have changed our approach to how we kick off games. Am I worried about the situation with the strikers? I was. But it's good to see that the team has that diversity, not just with the fact that we have 18 different scorers in all competition this season, but the fact that we have that diversity. I was worried that, thinking that we didn't have a focal point, maybe troublesome a bit. However, we now have the ability to score from any position. I mean, it's only Mendy, and Thiago Silva, Azpilicueta to score, Ansa, and then everybody else score. So, yeah, so definitely, I was worried a bit, but the team has shown their resilience, and they have shown their flexibility, you know, as with Norwich, all the goal scorers were English. Cho, who played a wonderful game, scored 1, Mount with the hat-trick, obviously. Rich James, with a beautiful chip. Chilwell doing what he does. And Max Aarons are all Englishmen. you know, and this is the first time, you know, there's some numbers here. It's the first time Chelsea have had four English players register goals in a single Premier League match. 10 of Chelsea's 23 goals have come from defenders. No team in Premier League history, no team, none, scores goals like Chelsea. With that 7-0 against Norwich, it's the 18th time scoring more than 6 goals in a match. 18. Nobody else does it. And the next piece of little numbers for you. 20th player to record a Premier League hat-trick for Chelsea, Mason Mount. Only one other club has more hat-trick heroes. And that's the other team from London, Arsenal. So, we will cut here and go into the interview as we speak about more of this and the Newcastle situation. We have Newcastle coming up next and other in-depth, we're going in-depth on some other topics. So let's go straight into the interview. Before I go, just want to let you know, as usual, remember the color, remember the game, remember the aim, and never ever let anybody forget the name. So you be good. Have a great, wonderful, and safe week. Today, this evening on this Shed and 868, we have a very special guest coming from way up north in the cold country of Canada. We have Mr. Feroz. Welcome, Feroz. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Jesus. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we all happy after we saw what took place early Saturday morning. What was it? Was it? You was expecting 7. I mean, we know Norwich is bottom of the table, but you're expecting 7.
Well, to be honest, Jesus, I'm a conservative guy, right? Mm-hmm. So before the match, I put on a blog we have, I said 2-0 at halftime. Because at 2-0 at halftime, we could relax, we could play our game, we could control. And I was hoping to end up at 3, possibly 4. 7, I would have never guessed, you know, I would, you know, but it was great. Mm. It was great. It's a statement of intent. But what I do like is when people say 7 is Norwich only play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a typical feedback you get. But you know what we did, what we had to do. End of story.
Yeah,
you know?
But the important, we needed, because had it been anything less than a win, it would have been crucified, you know. We'd have been
exactly
crucified. I mean, even when City hit them 5, it was nobody was seeing anything, but Chelsea's like, mm-hmm, always eyes on Chelsea. And I mean, we go into this game now. We have no Lukaku, no Werner. I was a bit skeptical, because I know, mm-hmm, Kai plays good as the center forward, but the false nine position kind of shake him up now. What really stood out for you as a watching this without our main strikers not even on the bench, stood out for you with when, mm-hmm, you had these three guys on top there maneuvering, and what stood out the most for you?
Well, what stood out for me was Callum Hudson-Odoi.
Yes.
This was the first game under Tuchel he played in his true position.
Mm.
3 years back when we had Hazard in our ranks, right? When Hazard was leaving, I said, good, Cho is the heir apparent for that left-sided forward spot. Things happened. He never got a true run. He got injured. Other people came in. So he never got a true run in that left spot. When Tuchel came in, he put him on that right wing-back kind of role, which is fine. He got in the squad, so he got minutes, so that's great. But what stood out for me, coming back to your question, is Cho. His initiative, his aggressiveness, his quick passing, his incisiveness in the box really made a difference in that first 20 minutes.
Yeah, he was very, very much direct. A lot of people, mm-hmm, have spoken about his direct approach. And you think that maybe now is the time that we could really see Cho like come to his own? Yeah, I mean, because we have Glassman on the left. I mean, it may sound bad, it may sound disrespectful, mm-hmm. but we have Pulisic on the left there, but he is always something. So you think now is the right time for Cho to grab it and say, you know what, I'm here, I'm staying?
Well, yeah, I don't think we have a choice. We if Pulisic come back, he may come back for one or two games, and then you never know, right? I think now is Cho's chance. He's young. He needs the minutes. He has it in him. So now is the opportunity. He has to grab it because it doesn't come by often.
Mm, especially right? in this Chelsea squad.
Yeah. Because you have Werner, who's a left-sided forward, right? Pulisic is out as well, who is seen as that left-sided person. And then you have, Lukaku's occupying that centre-forward spot. So now, if Lukaku wasn't injured, then Werner would possibly go in the centre. And then you still have that position on the left. So it's quite good to see. I mean, I know people, oh gosh, Werner out, Lukaku out. But to me, in the back of my mind, I was great. There's an opportunity for Cho.
Mm-hmm.
There's an opportunity for Havertz to get a good 4 or 5 games under his belt because he needs time on that pitch. Even Ziyech as well will get some minutes, right? Yeah. So I see it as an opportunity.
You mentioned Ziyech there, and he did something. He didn't that game, Norwich game. I realized that something that was missing from us, hitting from outside the box. I don't know what was the issue with Chelsea players hitting from outside, but Ziyech, like, he had that confidence just coming on and just like, you know what, I'm going to do this today, to hell with everybody else. And you spoke about getting minutes, and another player is a fan favorite, Loftus-Cheek. I know we're proud of him.
Right.
I know that.
I cannot smile enough when you say Loftus-Cheek. I mean, we go back again to 3 years ago when he and Hazard were the ones, the offensive players. He had 10 goals under his belt. They went and they played this game of no consequence in the States.
Yeah, the international champions thing, something like that.
Yeah, there's some game in, you know, made no sense. You know, he got injured and, you know, it took him back a whole 2 years. I'm happy that he's getting this opportunity. What I like about him is that when he gets the ball, he goes forward. He's strong on the ball. He protects it. He doesn't lose it. He passes it off, you know, and makes very aggressive plays. So I'm really happy to see him have a very strong 2-3 game run. And I really hope it progresses throughout the season.
And, well, I hope so too. But the thing is that where he occupies in the middle, we are extremely, we not saturated. We have talent in the position. So it could be very hard for him to get that game time. I mean, look, even Saul came across and I'm shocked that he didn't play against it starting in the Norwich game. You know?
Well, I think Saul might go back in January because as it stands now, when Tuchel warming up people on the side, from midfield position, he actually seen Barkley warming up before Saul. So if I was Saul, I would be worried, right? I think that that four midfielders, for the amount of games that we have to play, it will be a good run. I think everybody will get a fair play. We have Champions League, we have the Club World Cup. We expect to stay in the League Cup, which is 2 days tomorrow, in fact.
Yeah.
You know, so we have a lot of games. So, and Kante, as much as I love to see him running on the pitch, when he gets a rest, I think he deserves it. Yeah, so
more than so, Kante deserves anything he wants.
Yeah.
Whatever he wants, he could get in Chelsea players, fans, everybody else. You know, and The thing on that you mentioned the Club World Cup, right? And before the Club World Cup, we have the Africans Cup as well. So we have a lot of competition, right? Then it have Champions League in that mix. Then it have if you reach that far, the League Cup finals, and then the groups, and then we have the FA Cup as well. So and that's why I thought Saul would have come in and you know, the kind of footballer he plays, Atletico, this would be his area, you know. It was taken aback.
Yeah, I mean, it would, but we never thought that Ruben Loftus-Cheek would be playing so well.
Well, yeah.
Our next question is, why would Atletico let Saul go? I mean, is their squad so deep? I mean, we played them in Champions League earlier this year, and you know, there were shambles of what we expected to get from them, you know. So I think probably Saul was having the best time for the last couple of years at Atletico, and he's trying to reinvigorate his form. But I don't think he'll get the minutes at Chelsea that he expected.
So you think he would just go back to Atletico and say, you know what, I done here already, might as well just, if I get paid, might as well just see if I could do something else.
Well, the good thing for us with Saul is that, I mean, he is a good player.
Mm-hmm.
No two ways about that. Is no cost to us, really. It come like a player on rent. So he's kind of like a good insurance policy to have. But I think it will work out better for Chelsea than for him. Because for us, it's good to have him on the bench as a squad player.
Yeah, we had that there.
Yeah, but when he came to Chelsea, he was expecting to get more minutes than he's actually getting, you know. So on his side, I don't think it would be out, you know.
Yeah, I mean, even Barkley Fonkoum, a guy who I literally was like last year, like telling Villa, keep him, I don't do your business. Even Barkley Fonkoum, like he coming off, and he very impressive coming off the bench this season so far.
Yeah, now remember Barkley used to play with Lukaku.
In Everton.
So at Everton. So I think that they have some sort of understanding at some point. And I think I didn't see it in the media or anywhere like that. I didn't hear anybody talk about it. But just knowing that while they were at Everton, they were the two big players. I think that Barkley, the reason for his presence could be driven by Lukaku as well, to a certain extent. Because I really didn't expect Tuchel to have Barkley even see daylight. You know, I was shocked when I see Barkley warming up. And then he comes on, and when he comes on the pitch, he's very forward thinking.
Very much so.
He goes
very
forward, so. He makes a pass, he made that exquisite cross for
Azpilicueta, who swing. Yeah, that was a beautiful ball. That would look like something on a game like that look what excellent. And you're right, you know, I forgot clean, and I think a lot of people forgot as well that Barkley and Lukaku played together at Everton. The style of players, and you know, the time elapsed so much that was a very, very interesting point. Eh? I forgot that clean.
Then they were the two big Everton players.
Wow.
You know, on the sheets.
And now, so forward, we midfield now. Defense-wise, now, what do you think we should do with the biggest issue we have right now in defense is Rudiger?
Antonio Rudiger?
What do you think we should do with him? The man demanding equal pay like Lukaku. Do you think he deserves that or not?
I don't think he deserves $400,000 a week. If that is the figure that was touted
Is the rumors.
In the news. Yeah, mm-hmm. 400, no. If you tell me 200,000, I would think possibly.
But I think right now is 140, getting something like that.
Right now is 140, right?
Yeah.
Now, to be honest, right? If we have to replace Rudiger, right? And let's say if we get a Koundé or we get a Hiditomo Delete or someone, right? How much are we going to pay them? Right, under today's rates. I mean, Delete getting 200 in excess at Juventus, so he would expect to get. So my thinking is, if we're going to replace Rudiger, who are we going to replace him with, and what will we pay them? Right now, I think between him and Christensen, because today I saw Christensen's name cropping up as well.
Yeah,
he's not happy with the. So I was kind of surprised because I thought that that was
done deal. I saw it too. I saw it too. The talk about he not happy with what they want to give him, but he wants to stay. It's like, God damn, we're going through this again.
Yeah. That was worrying. So we definitely cannot lose two of them. Right? Definitely. Right. But Rudiger, I don't think he's worth 400. But I would go around 160 to 180 per week. If he doesn't take it, that's fair enough. And then we move on. But we have to acknowledge that salary is going up. Now, the next thing, player power. Now, I don't know if you noticed this, but not only with Chelsea alone, but you have players now are getting smarter. They're not signing. They're not really signing off on contracts, especially when they know that they're good. Look at Mbappe, right? He's not signing off with PSG because when he moves, he wants a payday, right? And I think as we go along, you will see more players running down their contracts order for them to negotiate for themselves.
Force the club to say what they want to do and whatnot. Well, I'm not against that strategy per se because a lot of them get ripped off from the managers, from the agents. Like,
of course,
I know De Bruyne dropped his agency.
Minou.
Yeah, De Bruyne dropped, and then this next one from Haaland and all them guys, Raiola. He is
ridiculous, man. He's ridiculous,
and he's I think he's Dilip's manager, agent as well. So all these are things that I think that the board will be looking at, and the player power thing. Yeah, I could see that. But honestly, I won't give him. I'll give him like 210, 220, Rudiger. I will give him like 210 because since Tuchel comes in, since Tuchel came in, he has shown how it is that like this is why I just do, you know, this is why I do. And Tuchel, I think Tuchel wanted him at PSG at a point in time as well too.
That's true. Yeah.
So we have him leave. May want to leave. Christiansen's bacchanal. Thiago Silva and Azpilicueta, they have like, let me say a year.
Right? Agent.
Right. So, realistically, we just have Chalaban. That realistically, that's what we have if we look at who committed solid already. So,
right. Yes.
And other clubs will be looking at this now. So, you as the board now, what are you going to do? You sitting on the board with Maria.
Firstly, I'm going to recommend that we keep Christensen and Rudiger, at least offer them as much as we could to keep them. Not the 400,000, but something realistic, right? And I think we have to keep, if not two, at least one of them, right? I mean, Chalobah is a gem, and we have to sign him on our contract for 5 years because we had to protect that asset, right? Now, between you and me, Malang Sarr, he looked good. But I don't think he is the one to take us to the next. When Thiago goes or if Rudiger goes, I don't think Sarr is the one to take over that mantle.
To be as ruthless as we needed him back then.
Yes, yes. I mean, Koundé, I haven't seen him play as well. I think on stats he's a bit short, but I know he's very good with the ball, so I've read, you know, so we'll see. But I think we do need, we have to negotiate. I think a possibility could be that Mr. Rudiger will run his contract down, then he will negotiate with everybody, and then he may even negotiate with Chelsea now to get a lump sum payment and accept a 200,000 a week, because I would be very eager to see if he lets his contract run down and what contract he takes up, if it's with City, if it's with Juventus, if it's with Madrid, because you're hearing all you need.
Yeah, only big boys coming out.
Yeah, Munich as well.
Yeah, I don't want to stay.
Like,
No, go ahead. Sorry, brother.
No, I was going to say, I mean, Munich, like all the Germans, right? But the thing is, Munich doesn't pay much.
That's something to stick at 100%. They don't play with that at all. No, and I'm a thing. I don't mind if he goes, but I don't want him to stay in England. at all Rudiger to stay in England. He was just too good.
Yeah, but you know, after I see Frank Lampard wear a City uniform, nothing will surprise me.
That hurts so much that
Rudiger, I'll just accept.
Yeah, Lampard, boy, come on and score the goal too. You know, that was just like you could have seen it coming. He coming on, he going and score. You just know he going and score.
It's
ridiculous. Now the whole this whole contract thing, right? I'm thinking like, well, the same thing, the player power thing that come across my mind and thing, and just like how players has managed to bully teams into accepting these contracts. Or case in point, Drinkwater. To me that should be a textbook case for all clubs. Danny Drinkwater. He's not worth anything. But Leicester knew Chelsea was desperate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
I remember clubs like Chelsea and City, once a club hears that they want their player, prices go up 10-20%, right? Now, you remember at that time too, Chelsea wasn't too good at transfers. We were making hideous purchases and lastly purchases just for to making it sake. No, where's this guy? I can never pronounce his name. Jaborj, the defender. We eventually sold him to Sunderland. Jilibodji or something like that.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Right? Yes. Jilibodji. But he was a
last minute buy.
Him, Drinkwater. Even Barkley to a certain extent was a buy to appease the fans. It wasn't a sought after move. Alonso and when Conte brought back Moses, I mean, those are people that Conte wanted. The Chelsea, we didn't know about them.
Yeah, but that style
we all know they serve the purpose.
Right. Where you looking at though? So 9 games in, we're looking good.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking good so far. Realistically, I am a very delusional fella since. since end of January when Frank, just before Frank left, I tell everybody Chelsea in Champions League. I'm a very delusional fella, very delusional guy.
Right.
I have blind loyalty to our fault with Chelsea. But realistically, where you see us landed in the league, Champions League, FA, League Cup.
Okay. In the league, I would say we have to challenge up to week 38, right? We might end up third, we might end up second, we might end up first. But I see going into that last game, we must challenge. I think we have a shout. I think it'll be a very close race between us, Liverpool, and City. I think it will come down to those head-to-head games that we have. Because, you know, but the thing is, I have full faith in Tuchel and what he does. I just cannot see teams beating Chelsea very easily, right? We had that one-off game last year with West Brom where we got like 5-2 or something, you know?
Everybody with that game.
But you know, even when we get licks, there's a method to the madness, huh? Because sometimes it's good to get beaten at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So it reinvigorated the team to know what they have to do, know what they cannot afford to. It helps the mindset, right? So I think, coming back to your question, so the 38th week, we had a challenge for that leadership position. We have a chance to win the league, all right? I wouldn't say that than 2 seasons ago, right? When it comes to Champions League, to be honest, I think we as good as a semi-final spot. And once in the semis, anything could happen.
Yeah, and our lucky bongs is finals.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I agree with you with that one day.
I know. I'm a greedy fella. I want everything.
But
right?
Who won?
I want the Club World Cup. You see, we get our Super Cup.
Mm-hmm.
That's that European Super Cup. Jesus, that was a game that, you know, I saw we lose it 3 times.
Wow.
I say, no, I cannot bear to see a loss again. We have to have that Super Cup. We went and we did the job and we won that Super Cup.
And that was the best birthday gift I've gotten in a while from Chelsea.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Birthday gift I got in a while.
My birthday gift was the Champions League.
You see, look at that. So everybody gets something. Everybody gets something for the birthday. No, that game was, and my boy Kepa came up trumps again, once again. Mm-hmm. You know, and so the Club World Cup, but I don't know, boy. Is how it landed in February, I really don't know, boy. I don't know, boy.
It could be tough. We have a big squad. We have a motivated team. We have to kill. What more you want? You know, I think we have a good chance. I mean, I'm not sure. The biggest rival there will be either Palmeiras or Flamengo. I'm not too sure who won to, or who will be represented there. But those Brazilian teams are not to be underestimated.
Not at all.
But we just had to keep our heads on. One thing I concerned about is when Mendy goes off to his African Nations Cup, right? So we had to make sure that Kepa gets games in between, leading up to that December, January time, because he will figure in important games when Mendy is out.
Yeah, for real. And now I feel he would start tomorrow in the League Cup game, Southampton. I believe he would play, and Sarr will get a run out, and these guys will get to play and thing.
Yes, I think we have to. We need to use the big squad. It's definitely something that we have to manage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I like about Tuchel, because he's always say the most important game is the next game. And he say when the next game starts, he will pick the best squad based on form, right? Now, he's the only coach who I heard talks about form. He talks about match fitness, the number of miles in the player's legs, because if they have too much miles, then they're prone to injury.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very cautious in terms of the you know, how much rest and recuperation his team gets. So, you know, I just know he takes all those things into consideration. Now, even saying that, people will say, but how do man play Werner and Lukaku and Lukaku, you know? But the thing is, I read in some article that Lukaku wanted to play. He wanted time on the field with Werner to create that rapport, create that he was... Because before that match... Tuchel did say that Lukaku needed a rest and he was tired. But so I was surprised game day come and both Lukaku and Werner on the pitch. And I mean they
look good.
They were doing okay.
They look great.
They look good. And
until you unfortunately
something stamped.
Unfortunately both of them came off and that was just like wow. But they look so good that I am afraid for other teams when they click in. That's Bacchanal because everybody knows how Lukaku plays in those strike partnerships. He plays excellent. Inter last season was testament to that. So him and Werner on top there with any combination of with Mount or Havertz or Cho, any of those combinations there, it's definitely a treat going forward as Chelsea fans, because I'm telling you, when that seventh goal went in, I was just like, we really put aside for seven? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Chelsea just like...
Ridiculous. I just want to add, I mean, the season's long, right? So you need people to give at certain points. So like now we see the defense scoring a lot of goals, right? But that's not going to hold for the whole season, right? At that time, then the strikers and the midfielders would start to give more, right? So you always need to know. I mean, I'm not sure if you remember, but yeah, you would. When Lampard's first season in charge, right? Tammy Abraham started the first 15, 16 games. He had 9, 10, 11 goals quickly, right? But then he went through a little barren spell. He got injured, he had a little barren spell, and he finished the season on 13 goals, right? So Now, that is not to bring up Tammy figures in any way, but shows that players give at a certain time of the season, right? I mean, special players like Salah, your Harry Kanes, your Agüeros, your Drogbas, I mean, they would be scoring
Then
consistently right through.
never out of season.
Yeah. But
Yeah, I get what you're saying. We need to have complements. Like, all right, defenders going now. All right, next 3 weeks, midfielders all do all the thing. Strikers go assists and keep it. And that's something that I think every Chelsea fan would appreciate, the fact that we have a well-rounded team. At least this we could focus on this season alone. Next season, we'll see about itself. As of right now,
Correct.
we have a, as they say, only person was only Mendy yet to score. It's only Mendy yet to score
Yes,
first.
it's only Mendy. We take a little penalty.
You know, so I mean, it is, and within researching for today, for today's well, tomorrow's episode, but today when people listening to it, I saw that we are like the highest team to win, not the highest team, sorry. We are the most in the Premier League era, the most 6+ goals games won is by Chelsea. And we,
Oh.
yeah, we under Ancelotti, we scored what? We had 3 games over 6 goals, 2 8-nil wins. We just like beaten sides that, but
That's true.
we last time I saw anything like this was Mourinho against Arsenal, Wenger's 1,000th game in charge. Yeah,
Yes.
6-0. That's the last time I saw something so profound like this. But it
Correct.
definitely
Correct.
it is good. The no we I know we spoke about this, eh? We just spoke about this with in terms of defense. But if you're on the board again, right, just sit down with Marina and we're looking at defense now. Is there anything else you want to look at in terms of the team now? Any other area we look at to strengthen up the back squad player or anything like that in January or in August?
Okay, well, in August, I definitely bring him back Brocha, right? Amado, you know, he had to be that because if he was in the ranks now, he would get some game time, you know, because of the injuries. What I think, you know, I think we need a creative midfielder, right? No, Jorginho is a register that they call it. He keeps the ball moving. He directs. He's like an orchestra, you know. But he doesn't make that insightful passes. I think we were hoping that Ziyech would be the one who would cut in from the right-hand side to make that creative pass and breakthrough. But I'm not sure. I mean, Cesc was the last player we had of that caliber who could really make that insightful pass.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, that one over the top and is Costa goal. It's just like, wow. And that's why a lot of people were upset with Jorginho, thinking that he was coming to do exactly that. Eh?
That's correct. Yeah, which that wasn't his game. I would want to add as well, we had to be mindful that Kante is aging, right? So we need a defensive midfielder who we could pass that mantle on to. I know we're looking at Gilmore, but we can't put all the eggs in one basket,
True.
right? This guy from France, Tchouaméni, supposed to be quite good and strong as well. So I think we have to look at those options. I mean, Rice would probably be good, but I think his price would be inflated, right? I would
Drastically.
prefer, yeah, I would prefer spend less, get a Tchouaméni, and then we give Christensen and Rudiger the salaries that they probably want or closer to. At least we could offer that, right? So that's
You bring up an important point there that I think a lot of Chelsea fans don't want to maybe peeping at it, the life after Kante. Because for every other player we buy, Kante has been like, I believe Kante is like the best buy we've ever made, besides Drogba maybe even. You know, so it's just like life after Kante is coming up very fast on us now. So what we're gonna do, we're gonna spend our rice money for rice. But me honestly, I don't like Declan Rice price, and I've never seen him. When I watch West Ham play, he doesn't stand out to me in the way that Kante stands out without being flashy. He does for me. He doesn't stand out in that sense. So I don't know. I'm not a scout, so I'm not seeing it. So I don't know. So maybe me. It may be me. You know, so there's something I've asked every single person I've ever had on this show. So a lot of people like to say Chelsea fans is now come fans and, well, they just follow the money and blah, blah, blah. To the extent I follow the money, but well, that's neither here nor there. So how you, Feroz, end up being a London Blue?
No worries. No, I'm not a young fella, right? Mm. So in 1987, 88, on TDT, on a Sunday, there was a big Serie A. So I used to watch a lot of Italian football, right? I used to look at Inter had the Germans, AC Milan had the Dutchmen, right? Bastien, Gullit. I liked Juventus, but more so I liked Viali. So like how young children now like Messi and Ronaldo. I like Viali. Then Viali moved to London, right? To Chelsea. So now blue is my favorite color, right? So I automatically, I just gravitate to Chelsea, right? Now, in those days, you didn't have much of social media, so you're just really following, reading the news on papers. You might buy a magazine or something like that, and you know, you get your information other ways, right? So 1996, 97 is when I started back in Chelsea, right? That time, Otto Glass was on the kit.
Yeah.
It was a ugly kit. I went to London. I didn't buy a kit, you know. But I still like Chelsea, right?
Yeah.
Then, now, I'm glad you brought up this point too, right? Because I had, the first thing I had to talk about was Matthew Harding, right?
Mm.
Because people want to say, and there's people who don't know, like your Arsenal, your Gunner supporters, your rival friends who support rival clubs, right? Matthew Harding was really the one who invested like 25 million of his own money at that time in the 90s to bring players like Viali, Gullit, De Matteo. You know, he brought a host of players across to Chelsea. And before Abramovich came, we won our European Cups. We won, we were very successful. We were not, you know, the top tier club. We didn't win a championship, but we were very competitive with the big clubs, right? At different things. And to me, people have to learn about Matthew Harding, because if he did invigorate the club, it may not have been attractive and Abramovich may not have bought, right? So I didn't become a fan because of Roman's money, right? I can't. Now, the thing is, people say, you know, the plastic clubs, the oil clubs, you know. And you know, but for me, any club or any business, in order to grow, you need investment, right?
Yeah.
So how you expect to take a small club and make it get bigger without investment? So if you go under the thinking of the Man U supporters who would say, we only spend what we earn, right? It's because they have a history, they have a big, they have a big fan base for years and years. So they have that to live on, whereas we didn't. So we did have to rely on outside funding. But as it is today, I don't think that is solely just Roman Abramovich funds, because of our business model, that youth system, right? We are producing footballers not only for Chelsea.
Yeah,
if you look at our academy players, Livermento and Bocha and
best. I'll be up there with La Mesa, one of the best. La Mesa, one of West Ham's academies, a very good academy in England as well too.
Yeah. Imagine we selling Southampton our academy players, right? 5-6 years ago, Liverpool was buying all the Southampton players who they develop, you know, the Manes, the Kleins, the, you know, Lallanas, they bought them all. So I mean, Chelsea as a business model is a very interesting case because it shows that investment yields success. It yields, going forward now, we don't overspend. When you compare to Manchester clubs, United, they spent before Klopp could have the squad he had. That's he did true. Buy.
Yeah, must invest. You know, like the whole thing. Like I was going to do a standalone piece about the Saudi takeover of Newcastle, but I don't know. But I just didn't want to go into that because it to me it just seems dirty. Just talking about it seems dirty.
Well, you know what? I mean, that's a unique situation, huh? Because off the bat, I would say it's okay for millionaires to buy clubs. It's done with the Glazers. It's done with, you know. But then they have the other political things that infiltrate and that, you know, it's tough to
separate both of them. You know, it's not just oil and water. It's a whole interconnected thing. Yeah. You know, but besides that, do you think that this this purchase of Newcastle would have the same ramifications as when Abramovich bought Chelsea? Yeah, we saw a significant, but Roman's case was almost instantaneous. It was instantaneous. But do you think a Newcastle buy would be like City then, a sustained and then explosion of competitive nature?
It could, but it depends. It depends on a couple things. Now, they would have to work harder, right? I will tell you why. Because to players, right? Now, England is already a very dark and gloomy and rainy kind of place, right? Now, London and Manchester, they are attractive for players, right? So if you're going to move from Barcelona or Madrid or Rome, you want to go to a London club. You want to go to a Manchester club. Now, Newcastle, from what I understand, is the north part of nothing. So it's really not an attractive place for players to want to go. So Newcastle will have to pay a premium as well for players, for top players
to come there,
to go there. Yeah. So they have a lot of work to do. So I think they have more work to do than City. I think it will take about 5 years before they start a challenge for a top four. Because firstly, let's be real, they're not going to get Mbappe or Haaland just going to Newcastle.
Yeah,
right.
They're not going up and go there just.
So. Yeah. First, they're going to get some better players like a Ward-Prowse or a Lennon. I mean, players who deserve to be playing top level football. And I think that Ward-Prowse is a top footballer.
He is.
And, you know,
excellent free kick taker. Excellent.
Correct. Yeah. So I think they'll go through a stage of just getting better, but I think it'll take some time.
And we have them next in the league on Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, we Newcastle's always been a jumbie side for us. Eh? They have always somehow does this eke out some kind of magic under hats. Where do you see they're coming from? They drew last time out against Crystal Palace. Yeah. Where see us with coming up against them now?
One, I am afraid that the striker that they have,
Callum Wilson.
Yes. I mean, he's a good striker. He very, you know.
Yeah.
He could be missing for the whole game, and there's that one touch you take, that one run is when he scores. So he's one to watch. I don't think they should be taken lightly, but Chelsea, over the last couple of years, I think we kind of coming out of it, but over the last couple of years, we had a way of starting games slow. I think we need to score early and put this game to bed within the first half. But I'm looking for a 2-0 victory.
Well, yeah. I hope we start off like a Norwich game. That's peace.
Well, true. But the thing is, players from Newcastle now, the new coach isn't in as yet, right? But they're going to have a new invigoration, right? They're going to, and Is it a game at Newcastle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm playing at
Okay.
Newcastle.
Right. So what I pay attention to when I look, when I pick my fantasy squad is the home and away. Because you see that trek for the Chelsea squad to go up north, that takes away a bit of them the energy, right?
The drive up.
So do all those, yeah. I mean, we as spectators on the TV, we don't see it. But, I mean, you're not crawling off your bed and just going to the match and playing. You're actually crawling, you know, you take that long bus ride the night before. You're not home, you know, so those small things do play a part. So that's why if Newcastle was coming to Stamford Bridge, I would definitely say, you know, 4-0, you know, something stronger, you know. And that Newcastle, now, a next thing with Newcastle, they have huge supporters. They have a big stadium. They have, I think, close to the biggest fan base in the UK, right? So, not to be underestimated, yeah.
True. I definitely gonna be definitely look out for that. I mean, I have a meeting that day, but that meeting gotta be in the background. Yes, something gotta happen. Something, I don't know. But before we wrap up here, any closing thoughts, remarks? Leave us with something.
Firstly, I just wanna thank you, Jesus, for what you're doing. 868 Shed is a wonderful brainchild of yours, and I really want to see it continue. I think that going forward is important to just have the topics flowing. Let's get some serious debates, you know, and just continue it. I thoroughly enjoyed this session. We spoke about a lot of things, about the future, the club, the results, the contract situation. So all I could say is, man, keep the blue flag flying high.
Yes, man, I'll do my best.
Yeah.
I definitely do my best, man. It's always be a pleasure for people on the show. It's always be a pleasure, to have guests, just to hear different, what people think, what they look at, or why look at people, maybe look at something else and see something else. I definitely would miss. You know, so definitely hope you will be back here sometime soon. Hopefully when you lift the Champions League trophy again or something else. After the Club World Cup,
of course.
Definitely, man. Definitely have
of
that.
Course.
Definitely, right?